It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief veterinarian at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. If I ever lose my mind, that intro is not going to happen. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning.
Oh, so
you can write it down and read it.
It doesn't have.
She does.
Oh,
it's true. I do. It's exactly true. All right. I actually want to ask you a question about mice, but instead, because that's personal, Shanice in Brooklyn, I think is going to take up the entire show because she has a 3-part question.
Okay.
All right, I live in the city, and it's that time of year when even a short walk with my 3-year-old Chiweeny, Mabel, leaves her thirsty. My dilemma is this. I have a shoulder injury, and carrying a bottle of water for her adds enough weight to my purse to make it onerous. And the store owners of Brooklyn are very thoughtful about leaving water out for dogs that pass by. But, question one, is letting her drink out of those public bowls just asking for trouble? She's vaccinated against dog flu, but I don't know if there are other potential cooties.
So I'll answer one at a time here. I would not. I would bring my own water.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea to have a, unless you're desperate for water and have to do that once in a while. But not a great idea to share spit with all the dogs in the neighborhood.
In the hood. Okay. So yes to the other potential cooties. All right. Question two. If you say the water is too iffy, I guess I could spend the money on one of those dog backpacks and make her carry her own water bottle. How big is a Chiweeny? I used to see those around a lot, but hardly ever these days. So did they go out of fashion or are they unsafe?
So I think a Chiweeny would be a Chihuahua and a Dachshund cross. So this is a very small dog close to the ground.
So that backpack's going to drag.
The saddlebags, yeah, they look like saddlebags. I haven't ever seen them on a little dog, and I think that on any dog who is one of the chondrodystrophic breeds, which means they're short-legged, you know, they have sort of short bowed legs, so that means their bones and their cartilage are not formed perfectly, and usually that also means that their intervertebral discs aren't great as far as resisting the sort of flexion and tension that they should for a Labrador Retriever, for instance. So, low to the ground and long back like that, I wouldn't put any weight on their backs.
That was question three.
So question two was, what about the saddlebags? People do use them. They're not a doggy backpack. I see them on dogs coming through the Appalachian Trail, not infrequently, and they carry their own stuff, but it's big dogs who can carry that weight on their backs.
Yeah, and it's just practically speaking, and this was question three, which you answered, but it's also perfectly reasonable, as in common sense. If they're safe, are they safe for long-bodied? It's like anything that low to the ground, putting a little saddle on that is just... I'm not the vet, but I'm just a person. I'm saying that's asking for trouble.
And a Chiweeny shouldn't need very much water even on a long walk. You know, they can get a little thirsty and be fine, just like we do. So a little bit of water is an okay thing. So you could, you know, fanny pack. My children laugh at me when I put on a fanny pack or any kind of thing around my waist because it's so, I don't know, dorky or something. They think it's hysterical, but I think it's, you know, practical.
Right.
Put it around your waist and put a little container of water with a cup on, you know, a very small cup for a very small Chiweeny tongue.
Yeah, and the whole, that used to be almost, when I say Western, I don't mean Western style, but it just, you always wore, it's easier to wear something around, human bodies are built to wear something around your waist, but you know, and on your backside.
And on your back, or
more,
symmetrical.
More easily
than a purse.
Well, a purse or even a backpack is, you know, tends to do the neck and the shoulders thing.
That's true.
And, you know, over the years, kids started putting books and stuff in backpacks, and then they were too heavy on the back, so they started carrying them on their shoulder. And the next thing you know, you don't you're not back to, it's called pioneer basics of putting something around your, you know, put something around your waist with a pack on your backside.
And yeah, seriously. Or even a big pocket, you know, in a pocket in your pants for a little tiny water bottle for a little tiny dog.
Right. But what you mentioned is a good point. I just want to go back to it for one quick second. The Mabel should not need that much water, even if it's like 9,000 degrees outside. I'm always curious about how to give good guidance because humans
if it's very hot, they dissipate heat through the tongue, and so that tongue can really dry out. Definitely. So we haven't had too many days that are that hot, but it's never a bad idea. I try to carry water in the car with me, and I always have a receptacle for it, so the dogs can drink out of the water bottle. It's a good idea to have it with you.
All right. So it's more a question of, I think in Shanice's case, she probably needs to carry it around her waist if she's going to carry it, and especially in the upcoming days when it is actually meant to be.
I would think if Mabel was in need of too much water, that would have been mentioned, that she drinks water, a lot of water at home as well. So if there's a normal amount of water drinking, then bring a little bit with you.
Basically, the main thing is this time of year when a short walk makes her thirsty. So she's
okay.
So I guess if you're going to carry something, do carry something, and how about a fanny pack is the veterinary advice for the day. Okay, David in Hillsdale. If you take your car to a mechanic for one thing, they usually check your fluids while they're at it just for safety. So if you take your pet to the vet for a specific thing, like, say, a booster shot, do they bother to check them for anything else? At the vet I go to for stuff like that, the vet tech takes your pet into the back room without you, so I can't tell what's going on back there. I'm just wondering, if I take my cat in for a shot, are they also taking her temperature and that kind of thing?
It depends on what you're there for. In my practice, we do have doctor appointments, in which case you will be seeing the doctor in the room, and most everything will be done in the room unless we draw blood, maybe clip toenails. But if you have just an appointment with a technician, so you're not being charged for a physical exam, then they might be taken in the back just to be given that vaccination. So a licensed veterinary technician can give a vaccination without a physical exam if your dog's otherwise healthy. So they should be asking you to make sure that they haven't had any problems. If there are any considerations like poor appetite or haven't been feeling well, then that vaccination shouldn't be given, and yes, they should be seeing the doctor. So,
I'm going to interject here, as is my want.
Do you think that's the question?
I think that is the question, and I think that different... I think that different practices are possibly different in that regard, but I do think that what's most important in this question is communication. In other words, if your pet is due for a booster shot and you get a card and you call up and you just organize for the booster shot, somewhere along the way, before the pet gets the booster, someone should say, hey, how is little Biffy doing? And that's really the crux, in my view, of that's the important thing, because people just go, I see this all the time. I've it's one of the drawbacks of being ancient, I think, is, you get to talking, and the next thing you know, the dog's getting a booster that they shouldn't be. You're talking about the weather, and the next thing you know, dog's getting something that they really shouldn't get, given how they've been doing for the past 6 months. So it's just...
Yeah, in my practice, when we do give vaccinations, we try to spread them out. So it's a little bit... the way I do things is a little bit different. So if they come for their annual exam, and I've done a full physical exam, a comprehensive examination, and I might give one vaccine, if they're due for a rabies vaccine, I might give the rabies vaccine. But if they want to have a Lyme vaccine, I don't want to give it the same day, so I'll have them come back in 3 weeks and have it with my technician.
Right, and that's not about that's not about trying to get an extra appointment. That's about how much stuff, and this is where perhaps human minds haven't evolved as much as veterinary wellness. But it's like how much stuff, because you used to go, when I say used to, decades ago, you'd go and they'd get everything. So would your kid. Ugh.
You know? Yeah, and they do, you know, and I can't say that it makes them sick every time, but enough pets do get pretty lethargic, and we used to say, still do say, well, that's okay, that's normal. But, you know, if you're causing that much inflammation to cause a fever, to me it seems to make more sense to cause less at one time so that getting any kind of long-term issues.
And one of the main things that I maintain in my fake veterinary, you know, my advice,
your honorary veterinary degree,
it's my honorary veterinary practice, where it's the hotline where I usually say, well, why don't you just call the vet? But that, on that one, is you know, one of the things we've always learned just is, if you do too many things, you're never going to know what works. You really do have to do one thing at a time.
True, or you might not know what's
you just
causing
don't
the
know exactly. It's just it just spirals more quickly than mm-hmm. than not. So I don't know. I just in support of go for your ex and then go for another ex. And in your practice, tech appointments are less costly.
Well, you're not paying for a physical exam,
right?
So
okay.
The technician will go in and make sure that your dog's feeling okay. And if they're not, we'll take their temperature and say, well, I'm going to check with the doctor before we do this. And we might either be able to see them then or put it off for another day or have a discussion about
what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Mark in New Paltz. Why is my dog crazy itchy as soon as the weather gets hot? Every morning in the summer, he wakes up covered in cowlicks from licking and biting himself. Could it be pollen? God knows the pollen is the worst right now. He's 4, a mystery mutt, and his hair is medium length.
I think it very well could be allergic skin. A lot of dogs have allergic skin disease, and so there is a threshold of things that you can be allergic to or things that cause inflammation over which you're going to show symptoms. So you might have a sensitivity to a couple of different pollens and a couple of things in the food, which you get away with, and then all of a sudden, you know, there are two more things pollinating at the same time, and that comes along with the warm weather, typically. So the pollens come along with the hot weather and lots of things in the air, so lots of inflammation causing the itch. So it does make sense that it is an allergy of some kind. So you can, you know, you can either work on that allergy or you can work on something else, such as maybe some sensitivity in the food that might bring that threshold up a little bit so that when the pollens come around, you have less of a response, if that makes sense. So these are additive allergens, and if you can get rid of one or two, then your symptoms would be less, rather than just suppressing those symptoms every year. Some dogs literally will only get, you know, itchy for 2 weeks out of the springtime, and usually you can just do some bathing and they'll be okay. But frequently, most dogs will get worse and worse each season, and so they have a longer period of time where they're miserable, and you need to do something about it.
And is that a consult your vet, or is there?
Yes. So,
and, like, what questions would you ask other than saying my dog is miserable?
Well, you need to have a physical and see if there's anything going on under the skin. So, you know, I'll have dogs come in now. For instance, I've checked their ears a month ago, and they're coming back for a recheck of the ears. Well, you know, 2 days ago they started to chew on the skin, so I can see that it's wet there, and when I look underneath, it's bright red. And so you're getting what's called a hot spot, you know, an acute moist dermatitis. And so the veterinarian can address that before it gets really bad and then can talk about potential underlying causes and what you can do about it.
Right.
So, you know, if it's going on more than a couple of days, I would have that conversation with your veterinarian.
Right. And I think that it's... Again, speaking of the evolution of animal care, and you know, as seen on TV, and even human care, it requires you need to be able to ask these questions. Again, on my hotline, I am frequently saying, "Well, have you asked XYZ?" Oh no, And it's, I mean...
It's a good idea to write down your questions before you come.
Yeah.
True. And, you know, bathing can really help to remove some of the pollens topically. But you have to bathe with the right thing, too. And that depends on the type of skin and whether there's crusting on the skin, whether it's oozing skin, whether it's smelly because you're in the pond all the they're in the pond all the time.
Right.
So, you know, thinking about all of those types of things and writing down all the information you can give is helpful.
And does that do groomers help with that? I mean,
they do. They spot a lot of things that people are unaware of.
Okay, and so at which point they will say, "Hey, go to your vet," or
they do very often.
Okay,
mm-hmm. So and ears as well.
All right, so that's another thing, depending on the size, genre, and style.
Mm-hmm. And keeping the hair short, if you can. You know, if you have the type of dog whose hair can be clipped, then keeping the hair short during the spring, summer, fall really helps so that you can see what's going on and get some more airflow to the skin.
And there was also, I don't know, 20 years ago or so, there was a thing where probably every golden retriever owner on the Upper West Side or Upper East Side, everyone shaved their dogs. Is that, and I always just wondered about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. If some of the golden retrievers have fairly, they shed out really, really nicely, and others just have a very thick coat that never sheds well, and that's, you know, that's another story. But if they are otherwise normal, then I'm fine if, you know, if people clip them down. It's better, especially the dogs who swim. So they're retrievers. They swim, some of them, every single day. They produce more of the oils from the glands, either because of the swimming or despite the swimming. I don't really know. I think it depends on the situation.
Mm.
And then they start to smell musty,
weird.
Almost moldy. Yeah.
No. Musty's too nice.
getting the hair out of there, so that huge amount of thick hair
right.
Keeps them from drying well. So you want a dog who's going to swim for a bit, but get out and dry, you know, because you can't, I mean, you wouldn't put your kid in the pool all day long. The skin would be...
wrinkly.
Yes. And same things with dogs. You can't let them swim all day. They can have a swim, they can cool off, and then they really need to dry out.
Right. And when you've got humidity, just boys and girls from my honorary veterinary hotline, you need to dry them. You've got to dry them. Period. Because otherwise, mm-hmm. It starts really stinking up the joint. All right. These are things that I can say, but you can't. All right. Jessamine in Dover Plains, when is a dog's dew claw long, and when is it too long?
The dew claw is, for people who don't know, is the nail that's on the toe that doesn't hit the ground. So it's on the inside of, usually the insides of the front legs. And it is a... vestigial claw, so you know it doesn't serve any real purpose, and it, because it doesn't wear, then that the nail on the dew claw can get quite long and sharp, and so when certainly when they're running through the brush can break more easily and bleed, but also can be pretty sharp on people if your dog's jumping on you, giving the paw. Getting your attention, which is what my dog does all the time on top of my face in the morning, then it is too. Oftentimes, it's too long and it can be sharp. So, when is it too long? You can see that there's a hook on it typically. So, on a large breed dog, there'll be a bit of a hook. You often can see through it, but if it's black, you can't. So it should be more of a triangular shape rather than a long hook on the tip, and you can always take that hook off with a nail clipper. Some dogs, especially small breed dogs like the pug, the nails curl quite a bit, and so they'll curl around into the pad. So if the nail is touching the pad, it should be clipped back. That means it's too long.
Right. So if it's scratching you or if it's... I mean, again, this is that question kind of cracks me up because I didn't know what a dew claw was until one was too long, and then from that point, I have always kept them at a reasonable level
yeah.
of curl.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is important to clip those as well
yeah.
as the other nails.
Are they not? So I guess my next question is: Are they not traditionally clipped? If you're having your dog's nails clipped, doesn't the dew claw get?
It does, but yeah. I think that sometimes at home, if your dog's one of those in the city, especially, and they wear really well, and you don't have them clipped, then you tend to forget about the dew claw, which doesn't hit the ground and doesn't wear.
All right, and so then too long is when it scratches your.
Yeah, and when it looks like it has a sharp hook on it, I guess that's what I could say. Yeah, and then when you bring wherever you bring your dog to have the nails clipped, you can ask them, please show me how to clip this or at what length should I clip it. I think the it's easier to show than it is to describe verbally.
No, I think you've done, right, I may be thinking that you've done a good job verbally because I know what it looks like. But I think that anyone can. I don't know. The hook is a really good image, and that hook should not be, you know, hooking into the pad or hooking in. It shouldn't be curling over. By the time it's a J, it's too long. How's that?
There you go. Sounds good.
Okay. I have a slight. I've just got. I don't even know what to say. What
do you
I have
time? A question?
I don't know. Do I have a question or am I out of time?
You're fine. You can end now, or you can go one more.
Then I'll end all right. I've got a really quick question, and that.
I hope it's a quick, easy one.
It's a quick, easy one.
Good.
Okay. If you are trying to catch a mouse, what's the best way to do it?
Depends on why you're trying to catch them.
If you're phobic,
hire somebody.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're trying to catch a mouse?
Well, no, there was a mouse. For some reason, Mars Black, my cat, my elderly cat, has found the mouse automat, and he keeps finding. Anyway, he was up all night because there was a mouse in the chair.
Oh.
And I was trying to get the mouse out of the chair, and I failed miserably this morning, so now the mouse is somewhere. But I just thought, wouldn't it be easy if I, whatever, could have just reached in and do I grab the tail? Like,
the mouse will bite you if you try to grab it. So
seriously?
Yeah, but you're never going to catch a mouse with your hands.
Okay.
Unless the cat's had it already and slowed it down.
No, cat hasn't.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult to catch a mouse with your hands.
Oh, good. I'm really glad I'm not
catching
just
a mouse with a mouse trap. Once they've crossed the line and they're in your chair or under your bed or something like that, you know, there you have to draw the line somewhere and say, okay, this is not okay. I'm putting out a mouse trap with peanut butter in it. So you have to find a place to put a mouse trap where the dogs and cat won't get into it, obviously. But so where is the mouse leaving poop?
No, the mouse is in the sunroom. The mouse is going to be freed, if at all possible.
Oh, okay. Yes. You're horrified by the thought of a mouse trap.
Huh?
I said,
no,
yeah.
I used to actually live in a loft that was above a spice market.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a lot of traps out.
Yeah.
And it was pretty repulsive. So,
you might be able to throw a towel over the top of the mouse, but again, trying to figure out where they are.
I don't want to do that. Okay, thank you.
Good luck with that.
This has been...
You're just going to make me laugh all day.
Pet Files, ask the vet. That's why I'm here. Underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.